There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Thursday style, Friday Eve. Glad to have y'all along. I talked to my buddy Dale Leash from Lanyap in just a second. I did see this text amongst the many that came in here. Don says, hey, Sean, I'm happy to announce the Kaneka sausage shortage. Try to say that one. Kaneka sausage shortage is over. Rouse had four shelves of it in Saraland. Well, Don, you know what now? There's not going to be any left. It's this sausage thing, which, by the way, I picked up the Monroe sausage during the shortage and been digging that. My son and I were digging that the other day. Enjoy, which another Alabama-made sausage. Great stuff. We do have choices of great sausage made in-state. But I think what you're doing, Don, I just want to caution you. Because people always send a text to me like, Sean, I just want to caution you. Okay, so Don, I just want to caution you. What you're going to lead to is a situation just like it is trying to find ammunition. Which, by the way, if anybody finds some 140-grain 7mm .08, I'd like to talk with you. Core-locked Remington. I mean, if I had a gun, I probably don't. But what you've done here, Don, is now that they get, because you had the shortage, you had the big Kaneka scare, now what will happen is people will overreact and buy way more sausage than they ever would have bought before. You know, people buy like a pack or two, right? Like what you need, not to, and it used to be like that with ammunition. What's going to happen now, Don, because people like you, I just want to caution you, Don, caution. That you'll lead people to hoarding. And soon it'll be people standing there when they open up the grocery store, running in, buying whatever came in overnight sausage-wise, and running back to their hamlets to store it away for the zombie apocalypse or something like that. All right, just caution. Don, it's a joke, but people caution me a lot on the text line, so I'm just cautioning other people. Let me caution my friend Dale Leash. I don't know what about cautioning about, but I'm you've been cautioned, okay?
I don't like the juxtaposition of you going straight from a sausage shortage to talking to me, but I'll let it go.
This one time, I just caution you.
Okay.
I just caution you.
Okay.
Hey, Happy New Year. You and I have not talked since the New Year, so Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year. I'm glad it's 2022.
Yeah, we can screw this one up too, though. You know,
we will. Let's set expectations low and just assume that we will, and then move forward.
They will be pleasantly surprised if it's not a dumpster fire.
100%. Yep.
Okay. So, how are things going over at City Council? It's your story this week. Councilors warned Stimson of using capital funds inappropriately. So, is there a spark in the dumpster? What's going on?
It's not. I mean, it's not all that serious. To be honest with you, but it's we'll call it more of a just to be cautious, just to put a word of caution out there, or whatever. Right. However, you talked about the sausage shortage, it's very similar. In what started as kind of a debate over where CIP funds were supposed to go from one district to citywide projects, the city council slowly started to realize that that at least in one case, that the Stimson administration was kind of going back to what the Mobile City administration previously had been known for, and that was using capital money to go towards operational expenses, which can get you into some trouble if you're budgeting for the city. If you want to continue to make repairs and things to streets and sidewalks and roads and whatnot, you want to keep the capital money, you know, at a certain level, and if you're using it for operational expenses, you take it from what could be, you know, these projects that are beneficial, and put it to just kind of keep the doors open, so to speak. So they wanted to make sure they nipped that in the bud, basically. And so what happened was a tree trimming contract came up, and the mayor's office wanted to use some additional capital funds that had been used for a project, but these were kind of the leftover funds. So the leftover capital funds from one project they were going to put into this tree trimming contract for $500,000, and with the promise of doing more tree trimming because it needed to be done. And so the council kind of looked at that and was like, wait a second, that's taking capital money and putting it into operational expenses, and that's kind of what got us in trouble before you took office. So let's mm-hmm. not do that. So now I think they're going to work out a way to kind of keep it within the same budget.
Yeah, but, okay, first of all, I mean, just the naming of it, capital means one thing. Right? Operational right. means something else, so there's that. But
right.
the idea, and you talk about Councilman Ben Reynolds here saying he didn't feel comfortable with the leftover capital funds from District 4 being used for a project outside the district. I can understand that, right? If your job, obviously you're a councilman for the whole city, but you're number one a councilman for your district. If your share of the CIP is whatever, but then they say, well, you didn't use it all on that street paving, so we're going to come, I guess, sweep the account and go use it for something else?
Right, and so in this particular case, it was for citywide re-roofing. So every year, a portion of the money that's separated into districts, every year, a portion of that goes to citywide projects, and they take it out of every district. But this was for a re-roofing project, and they used some of the money set aside for the re-roofing project, some of that capital money they used on the re-roofing project, but when they were finished, they had some left over. So they were just like, hey, let's flip that money over to here and pay for this tree trimming. But you know, not only does that take...
It takes more from one district.
Reynolds' argument was, you're kind of robbing from projects that could be good for my district.
Yeah.
And you're putting it into projects that won't affect my district. So that was his argument. The larger argument was, you're taking capital money and you're putting it to operations when you have this large amount of... You have a large rainy day fund right now, you know, that the mayor can play with. We saw $30 million of it go to the airport mm-hmm. terminal. So they've still got leftover money from a rainy day fund that they could use for, you know, take $1 million from and put towards tree trimming. And instead, they're using this capital money, which has been designated for capital. And I think the argument there is put it in a different capital fund, put it towards a different project so we can get some of these capital projects going.
Right.
And if you need operational money, use the rainy day fund or use some other fund.
Yeah, and you have to make sure so things don't get out of control, right? So if you need that for operational, you got to ask, you know, for operational so you can see where your spending is. I mean, it's one of the many things, in my opinion, as the editorialist around here, one of the many things that are feathers in Mayor Stimson's cap is how we've turned around the fiscal situation in the city of Mobile. Gone are the days of the, oh my gosh, we can't keep the doors open. To where we are now and credit rating right. improvement and having the money and no furloughing and all that stuff. It's a very big change. So, I mean, I think you wouldn't want to screw that up.
Right. And I think that's what the council was kind of cautioning him towards. And as you'll recall, there was, you know, there's been a kind of a change in the leadership of the fiscal of the finance department. And I think that's kind of led to maybe a difference of thinking on how this sort of thing works. Because you heard Bob Holt, the new finance director, basically say, I don't like to have money just sitting there. If we can use it for other things,
right.
we're going to do that. And that's fine. But I think the council is just like, that's fine, but use it for another capital project. Don't do it on something that we all think is operational.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's in the cliche of the day. Don't take it from one silo. I think everybody says silo now. Don't take it out of this one silo and move it to another silo.
Right. No, and it's exactly right, because you're going to need that silo with the money in it. You're going to need that for something else down the road. So let's just keep it where it is. And if we need to, you know, tree trimming is a worthwhile project. I don't think anybody thinks it's not. We have a lot of trees in the city. They need to be trimmed, especially the ones in the right of way.
Oh, yeah.
For safety reasons and whatnot. So let's get the money for that, but let's not get it from capital.
Okay. I'm sorry. Of course, I buried the lead in this. But do you have any update on the squirrel removal? I mean, that's the biggest story of the day beyond all these others, is what's happening with the squirrels of Bienville Square.
Just picture picture yourself for a minute, if you will. If you're a squirrel downtown, you're living the life, you're being fed peanuts, you're being fed all kinds of things from strangers. It's the greatest, you know, you're tamer than most squirrels because
you're fatter.
You've been around people.
You're obese.
You're definitely fatter. You're out of shape. And then, you know, you're eating lunch one morning and you fall through a hole. Bam. You're in a trap.
Right.
And you're sent out to the country with all the country squirrels. And you're expected to, like, just live a normal life.
They're going to get
out
hazed.
Out of the country where you've never been before. It seems kind of ruthless, right?
Yeah, not only are you from the city, you're fat. You're a fat squirrel from the city.
Yeah, you're going to have to learn, like, the mean streets. You're going to have to learn now. It's go time. So the city has an overpopulation of squirrels in Bienville Square. There's about 118 squirrels, and that's about five times more than what should be there. So the argument the city is making for removing 25 squirrels is that it will not only help the trees, which the resources on the trees get used up faster than normal because there's five times more squirrels, also helps the squirrel population, which, you know, there's a lot of competition right now in Bienville Square because it's 2.5 acres and there's 118 squirrels. You'll lessen the competition. You'll make it easier for the squirrels to coexist with each other when there's fewer of them, and you'll help the trees at the same time. So that's what the city's take on it is. But for me, it's just funny that, you know, you're just minding your own business being fed in the city, and all of a sudden you get shipped out to the county.
It's similar, though, to the stories I hear that the cities used to do between Mobile and Pensacola, that there would be an urban outdoorsman or a downtown layaround person that would get all of a sudden put in a car and driven to the other city. I can't confirm nor deny that they would take people from Mobile and drive them over to Pensacola and drop them off, and Pensacola would drive people over from there and drop them off here.
So they were
relocating humans back then. Now we're on to squirrels. What happens? Hey, what? I asked this question the other day when I first read your story. So as an amateur biologist here, listen to this, that when you take out the other squirrels, you take out the 25 or whatever, the remaining squirrels will get to squirreling, right? Little he-in and a she-in. And then there will just be more squirrels again. So, I mean, I suggested that they spay and neuter the squirrels that are left, but I haven't heard anything about that. Have you?
That is a take. So, yeah, and apparently, city squirrels get the he-in and she-in more than the country squirrels do because they're better fed, you know, and so they seem to have more energy, and so they can breed up to twice a year. So we're talking about, and this is the time. This is like prime breeding time for squirrels. So this is the time that they get to the he-in and the she-in.
Mm-hmm.
So, to use your term.
Thank you. Technical
but I'm going to use your term.
Yes.
So they're going to do the squirrel thing, and you're going to have more squirrels, and I assume that we're going to get to a point where we're going to have to remove some more.
Maybe I need to petition the executive branch here if they're listening. Do your first squirrel removal, but then take the others, because what will happen is if you took them all out, okay? So if you took all the squirrels out, then there would be a migration of squirrels from other places coming in going, wow, there's no squirrels here. This is a good place to be. Let's set up shop here. So what you do is you take out the overage. The SPA is high, which is the squirrels per acre, right? The SPA is high. So we bring the SPA back into normal constraints, get this. And then the remaining squirrels, we go Bob Barker and spay and neuter them. So they're there keeping other squirrels from moving in, but they're not. They might be he and a she in, but there's no little ones. So just an idea.
I'm dying to know how much that would cost, though. I really am. That would be great. And you know, it's our own fault. We introduced squirrels into parks in the 1840s. It was a concerted effort, I guess, all over the country. This is my boss and the co-publisher of the paper, Ashley Trice, was doing some research, some squirrel research, and so she found out this information. But yeah, apparently we introduced the squirrels to parks. They're not indigenous to parks.
They would
not probably migrate to parks on their own, but we brought them,
my
and now
foot,
they're our problem.
My foot. Tell my friend Ashley, she's all squirreled up on this one, because indigenous. They were indigenous in every part of Mobile before we cleared it off and built a city here, right? So the squirrels were here first.
Fair.
I mean, they were here before 1703. You know, I love love the history of our city here, but the squirrels were here even before the the French arrived.
So we were indigenous. Stole the land from the squirrels. Yeah,
pretty much.
You're right.
Pretty much. So then we bring the squirrels, and then maybe they brought, when the squirrel numbers were down, they brought some squirrels into cities to put them in the parks. But right now, I promise you, if we took all the squirrels out of Bienville Square, every last squirrel out of Bienville Square, within 2 or 3 weeks, I'm telling y'all, there would be some pioneers, some squirrel pioneers with their squirrel Conestoga wagons. We'd come in and settle this new land. Just telling you how things
are. All right.
So just tell my friend Ashley I disagree. All right. Remind folks here in the new year who have and of course, let's talk about where they can grab the old-fashioned lanyap if they want to, touch paper when they read it. But if they don't want to do that and they want to do what I do and get it online, how do they get a subscription? What do they need to do to support y'all?
Lanyapmobile.com. Click the subscribe button. Follow the prompts. We would love to have your support. We're locally owned. We're locally focused. We all live in the area. So please help us out if you can. You'll get the digital copy of the paper every week online. You can flip through it digitally. You can also any news story that we break, anything that happens that we write about will be on the website for you to peruse at your leisure. And we still have paper copies of the paper. Out in the stands, purple boxes, all that good stuff. But subscribing digitally is the best way to get the news.
It's great. Y'all need to, if you've not done it in the past, make this the year that you get signed up with Lanyap.
It's 21 cents a day. 21 cents a day is all to support your friendly local reporters.
And doing great work out there. As always, man, I appreciate our conversation, Dale. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
All right, there he is. Dale Leash, LaneAppMobile.com, and we're coming right back. I got to sort through some of these texts. Yeah.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, news on the way in just a minute or two, and then we'll come right back with Congressman and candidate for Senate Bo Brooks. Y'all's text here. Sam said, I just passed Bienville Square, and it appears a hawk or a large bird was eating salmon. Number of people gathered around the city. Maybe it's a little late. I don't know if it was salmon or a delicious squirrel. There, you can look up on the buildings surrounding Bienville Square, and there's some raptor nest up there, right? I don't know if they're, maybe somebody works down there. Are they red tails or what do we got? We get more birds of prey this time of year because they migrate, right? Just like doves or ducks or whatever, they'll migrate. So maybe like a peregrine. Those little jokers, amazing. The F-16s, like tinier. I mean, just they're amazing birds of prey. Jace says, this is how stories in the squirrel world get started about your dad going out for milk and never coming back. Imagine going out to collect food for your 5 ungrateful squirrel kids, and then you get abducted. And then, Jace, if you ever make it back from wherever they took you to and you come back, you'll say, listen, so there I was. I saw the peanut, and I went to get the peanut. Next thing I know, I'm in Wilmer. Yeah, sure you did. Let's see. Ronnie says, Sally and Zeta stressed the trees last year, so more acorns were produced this year. That equals more squirrels. It does. Food equals, but Ronnie, even before, you're spot on in the regular natural world, but downtown, I don't think we have the big issues for them not getting food because popcorn and peanuts fill in where the acorns leave off. Which, by the way, I know I did this, and we did an interview with a man who had been in this, who had seen it firsthand, but this has been years ago. May have to do it again on the show. The squirrel migrations, have you ever heard of these? When there's, it usually happens in the Appalachians and maybe the Atlantic coastal plain is where most of the stories I heard of, where you have acorn crop failures and you have a squirrel migration. Like they're getting run over all over the roads, like beyond normal run over. They're like a diaspora of squirrels moving forward across the landscape, going to find some acorns. These things really have happened in our country. I, I have to dig the stories up. Supermom, can you imagine a Bienville Square squirrel in Washington County? Talk about a rude awakening. Yes. There's crockpots. Supermom and I hunt pretty close to each other up there. And, yeah, there's crockpots all over that would love a big, fatty squirrel from the city. Now we've gone into gray squirrel casinos. Now, I've lost institutional control of the show, which is pretty normal. Congressman and candidate for Senate Bo Brooks joins us next.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Former President Donald Trump is responding to President Biden's fiery speech on the anniversary of the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, saying the remarks alluding to Trump's role in the riot deepen political divides in the country. Trump in a statement saying Biden's remarks were political theater. Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis saying January 6th is Christmas for the media. DeSantis adding the media will milk this for anything they can, and they're going to continue to try to smear anyone who supported Donald Trump. The Labor Department says 207,000 Americans filed initial unemployment claims for the week ending on New Year's Day. That's a jump of around 7,000 from the previous week's revised total. The jobless numbers for the month of December come out tomorrow. This is USA Radio News.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
We'll expect a few showers this afternoon. It will be warm with temperatures in the lower 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy and cold, lows in the mid-30s. And then tomorrow, sunny and cool with high temperatures in the mid-50s. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
Bayou Fasteners would like to thank those who place themselves on the front lines to make our community safe. For giving up time with your families, working in difficult conditions, for giving up your weekends and holidays, who serve and protect others, we remember it's the land of the free because of our break.
It's time to be together again. Time to hug your grandparents. To play sports again. Attend concerts. Masks off. But it's up to you. Get vaccinated for your family, children, and community. Together, we can protect each other and get back to doing the things we love. Learn more about where to get vaccinated at mchdcares.com or call 251-690-8889. This message has been brought to you by the Mobile County Health Department.
Retirement. It could be the best years of your life. You'll finally get to do what you want to do. Travel, golf, spend time with the grandkids, or just relax at home. But you have to plan for it. Start by tuning in to Andrew McNair of Swan Capital every Sunday at 1 for What Your Money Would Say. Make retirement the best time of your life. Tune in every Sunday at 1 for What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair.
Swan Capital is registered to conduct advisory business in Alabama and Florida and in other jurisdictions as permitted by law. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
At Southern Cancer Center, we specialize in one type of cancer, yours. Cancer, it's as unique as your thumbprint, but so is the treatment. Let our team of experts guide you right from the start and customize a treatment plan specific to you and your type of cancer. Let's be honest, we know that one size does not fit all. So why should your cancer care? Come see what makes Southern Cancer Center different. Visit us online at southerncancercenter.com.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, at 135 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along on this Friday Eve. And if it decides what it's going to do, it's supposed to rain at some point. It's been beautiful blue skies and then clouds and then back to partly cloudy. Dr. Bill says expect some rain and then getting cold again. We'll get more from him in just a little bit. Right now, I'll say hello to AL5 Congressman and candidate for U.S. Senate, Mo Brooks. Good to talk to you.
My pleasure. You're making me a little bit envious with that weather forecast. We're looking at ice and around 15 to 19 degrees here in the Tennessee Valley tonight.
Well, I just, you know, point out there's some differences between AL5 and AL1, right? It's like 30 degrees difference right now.
Well, we have the Tennessee River and a lot of great freshwater lakes. You have the ocean and the beautiful white beaches along our rather short coastline.
Yes.
Makes me want to take back the panhandle of Florida that we used to have around 1800, 1810. But Florida got it away from us.
Well, can I get you on record today, Congressman and candidate for U.S. Senate, that if elected to the Senate, you'll move to bring the state line down right down through the panhandle and bring that part of Florida back into Alabama?
Well, I'd be all for it, but I'm pretty sure Florida's not going to want to give it away.
You think you'll get some pushback on that?
You can imagine it requires a significant vote in the United States Congress to change state boundaries. But just as an aside, for those who are unaware of what we're talking about, I have a tie, it's a museum artifact tie, that has all these ancient maps on it, and one of them has Alabama from Apalachicola Bay all the way to just west of Mobile Bay.
Now, that would be...
all in Alabama.
And hopefully, you know, I'm going to start trouble with the other end of the state, we would somehow gerrymander that all be AL1. Everything would be AL1, so I'm just saying.
Well, you might have a fight over who gets the beaches.
See.
Or, quite frankly, it'd be... it might be AL8 because there's enough population there to give us an entirely new congressman.
So you'll see that headline tonight, y'all, that Congressman and candidate for Senate Bo Brooks is asking to take back part of Florida to make AL8.
I'm sure one of my opponents will make a big deal out of it. That's what they do. As you may have noticed, there's even a report most recently where one of Katie Britt's surrogates surreptitiously tape-recorded a private conversation and gave it to a reporter, which is fine. I was extolling how great Jeff Sessions was as a United States senator. And so I'm fine with that. That's my belief. He's one of the best senators we've ever had. He and I together, collectively, we killed the Gang of Eight amnesty bill. So I worked with Jeff Sessions very, very well when he was in the Senate and I was in the House.
Well,
if anyone hit me for that, go for it.
Well, I got hit. That's okay. Let's navigate that for a second, because it's this zero sum game. I was somebody who has been friends of when he was Senator Sessions and beyond. And when I would defend him, when he would get attacks from President Trump, people would question, you know, my conservatism. And I would say you could have differences of opinion about his style, but if you're questioning the conservatism of one Jeff Sessions, it's wrong tree you're barking up.
Well, he played two different roles. One was as a U.S. senator and one was as an attorney general. I did not interact with him personally much as attorney general, but I did as a U.S. senator, and as a U.S. senator, he was great. Now, I tried to get him to stay in the U.S. Senate and be a floor leader for the MAGA agenda. He chose to go elsewhere. That was his right and privilege. President Trump chose to appoint him to attorney general. But I'll guarantee you this, he'd have been a whole sight better as a U.S. senator than Doug Jones, whom we ultimately got.
You want to, Ed, I want to discuss that as well. You've talked about this of the process of Doug Jones being the one-term senator, Democrat senator here in Alabama. And you've talked about this. I know you were at an event a few months ago talking to, I think you're in the Wiregrass somewhere, talking about who voted how and who, you know, you said you
Crawford
voted.
County Republican Women's Club.
Okay. And you said, you know, that you were the person that voted for Roy Moore out of the group that's running for this job.
I am the only candidate for the United States Senate who voted against Doug Jones getting elected in the first place. In 2017, I was one who stood with 650,000 other Republicans who voted against Doug Jones.
And how can you explain? People hear you say that and say, well, how's that true? These are Republicans. They didn't vote for Doug Jones.
Well, according to the records of the Alabama Secretary of State's office, they took a walk. They didn't vote at all.
So you were the one person out of those people running that did put a vote, and you voted for Roy Moore.
That is correct. On pro-life issues, on border security issues, on conservative Supreme Court justices, on whether to impeach Donald Trump, on repeal of Obamacare, Roy Moore was a far sight better on public policy issues important to the future of our country than Doug Jones. To me, it was clear cut.
Right. I want to come back and talk about the campaign some, but of course, as you come on, you know, my social media feeds fill up with the people that are constantly questioning. Every time you're on the show, I think I'm inundated with, you know, I don't know how many bots that are at me on social media.
Hey, someday we ought to just have them ask questions. Open it up. Anyone can ask anything they want. I don't duck questions. I understand some of the candidates are doing that, but I don't.
Ask you this one here. We'll start off here on you know, 1 year since, you know, and the semantics wear me out. I think what happened, I think there was a legitimate protest, and I think there were also people that rioted and broke into the Capitol. I don't see them as the, you know, same people, but this idea.
The same people. Well, there were some of them, but there's also some difference.
People, the question here, I mean, it comes out, is you've dealt with it so many times. I know it's old hat, but this idea that your speech there was the go, was the whistle, whatever cliche you want to use for what happened that day. When you said people should kick ass and take names, that you called that group into storming the Capitol.
That is categorically false. That is pure propaganda by socialist Democrats, the fake news media, and wrong. If you actually look at, which I would encourage people to do, there were two sentences in one paragraph. Now, granted, the first sentence was kind of a run-on sentence, but it made clear that I was talking about the 2022 and 2024 elections, okay? And then the second sentence, which contains the phrase, taking down names and kick ass, that's just a part of the second sentence. The first part is, after talking about 2022, 2024 elections are upon us, we got to fight in those elections. I go, as such, today is the day we take down names and kick ass. So what names do you take down? Well, you take down the names of those congressmen and senators who vote different than what you believe is best for the interests of the United States of America. Then, when do you kick their derrieres? Well, as the first sentence indicated, in the 2022 and 2024 elections. So it had absolutely zero to do with the attack on the United States Capitol. In fact, I actually mentioned, with respect to those that go to the Capitol, I asked them to do something. And that was USA, 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 to show their patriotism. There's no violence associated with chanting USA. But the way the news media and my opponents distort the speech to make it into something it quite clearly was not is an abomination.
I want to talk about another part that gets hurled out there, and it's this discussion of you wearing the bulletproof vest, the ballistic vest there.
Yes,
you and I
have
had this discussion a lot of times, but people haven't heard this.
At the rally.
Yeah, at the rally. Talk about the why of that.
Well, I was advised by my staff that they had been advised by Capitol Police that there were an enormous number of life, death threats against me. My wife asked me to wear a bulletproof vest that we had recently acquired because of that threat matrix. And so I did when I left the Capitol complex to go give the speech at the Ellipse rally. And once I got back to the United States Capitol complex, I took off my vest. So when the real violence took place at the United States Capitol, I wasn't wearing it.
So it was the Capitol Police that told you, because I've heard from other members of Congress that were getting these messages too, some selected, that it was Capitol Police telling y'all there's a heightened level of a chance of violence and you should take precautions, right? And you shouldn't walk in certain areas and all that. Is that
okay,
true?
Okay, well, let me be clear. All this is secondhand to me. They did not tell me personally. It's my chief of staff who told me he had communication from the Capitol Police that resulted in my chief of staff advising me to wear my bulletproof vest. That word gets to my wife, Martha. She advises me to wear the bulletproof vest. Then in the preceding days, I'd also had different congressmen tell me that they had talked to Capitol Police and that there might be some violence coming from the direction of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and we needed to take precautionary steps. Now, normally I take a lot of this stuff with a grain of salt, but after having been shot at by a socialist Democrat on the ball field,
yep,
you may recall 150-something bullets having been fired over about a 6, 7, 8-minute span, you take those threats a little bit seriously.
I think you take them a lot seriously. Of course, I, you know, remember the morning you and I were talking as the helicopter was taking Steve Scalise out. If you're just joining us, talking to Congressman and candidate for U.S. Senate Mo Brooks, and I'm going to walk through this, and I mean, just critically thinking for me, because it gets thrown out by the bots, but it also gets obsessed by AL.com and other people out there, this bulletproof vest. If the idea you were wearing a bulletproof vest to do what? To lead a charge? I'm left not understanding. Well, okay. I understand what you said, but their idea that it's a bad thing.
The Socialist Democrats, Sean, combine everything into one. There were four different things that happened in Washington, D.C. on January the 6th. First, there was the rally at the Ellipse. That was fully in accord with the United States Constitution, First Amendment freedom of speech, First Amendment freedom of assembly, First Amendment right to your government for redress of your grievances, okay? And as far as I know, no one was arrested for any conduct of any kind at the Ellipse rally.
Right.
And the Ellipse rally was a mile and a half away from the United States Capitol. You would think that people would figure out that those are two different locations, a mile and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
So if they think of where you are right now and think of something a mile and a half away in Mobile, that's a pretty good distance. That's a separate thing, okay? Separate building, separate location. And so sometime towards the end of the Ellipse rally, there was an attack on the Capitol. I didn't participate in it. I only had this second. Began. I didn't see it begin. And then there was a third thing, and that was that we began our debate on the Electoral College contest at noon. That was inside the United States Capitol in the House chamber, and later broke into two parts into the House and Senate chamber. Now go back to that second thing, the protest at the United States Capitol. You have to break that down into two parts. That's what I mean by there being four total. One part consisted of people who were engaging in criminal conduct by trespassing inside the Capitol or engaging in violence or other illegal activity concerning the Capitol Police or the grounds, okay? And then the other part were those people who were outside the United States Capitol who did not engage in any kind of illegal conduct, mm-hmm. who were lawfully expressing their First Amendment rights and doing so in a peaceful manner. So the news media and the Democrats want to combine all this stuff into one. But really, they're clearly three separate events, and with respect to one of them at the U.S. Capitol, there's two different parts.
Yeah, and just the logic of it, I've tried to look at this analytically. If you were behind something, this allegation, you knew this was going on, that why would you have been in the Capitol?
My bulletproof vest?
Yeah, why you take off the bulletproof vest and go get in the Capitol? If that's the thing, I don't know why that's not asked and discussed. That seems like pretty logical question. Like if he knew, then why was he no vest and went to the building that you said he knew was going to be stormed?
Well, that's because of the propaganda aspect of this. You're being thoughtful. You're being nonpartisan. You're being fair. The people who make these kinds of allegations either have a brain the size of a pea or they're highly partisan for one reason or another.
Maybe both. Let's talk some minutes here.
Often it is.
talk more.
At least from my perspective. It's the same thing about us.
I think did we lose him? All right, if y'all in there, see, because the signal was just really, really bad. See if we can get him back on. If you'll call back in, hopefully we'll... if he's up in AL5, no, I guess he's in Washington right now. I don't know where he's calling in from, but if y'all can get him patched back through. I'll tell you what, run to the news and come back, and we'll come back with more from Congressman Brooks. We'll get hopefully a better signal here and wrap up the hour with that. Be right back. This is Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And we're back, and we've got to raise the antenna and get a better signal to AL5 Congressman, candidate for U.S. Senate, Mo Brooks. Continue our conversation. We dropped out, but we'll pick it back up. I was going to talk about more about the campaign now, the you know, just after we get through, I guess, the frequently asked questions, you know, when it comes to January 6th. Now we move on to the future. Talk about the campaign. Talk about what you're doing here. We're in the home stretch to the primary here.
Well, everything we've just discussed is related to the campaign because our foes are trying to use it to our detriment. They're trying to intimidate me. And I can promise you that I'm not backing down one inch in the face of these folks who might shoot at you on a ball field or assassinate your character in some other way. There was a significant amount of voter fraud and election theft activity. I stand by that. I've got the evidence to prove it. The news media, of course, ducks it. But that's where I am. Now, on the campaign side, everything seems to be going real well. We've been working hard since March and April. Crisscrossing the state. I was in Mobile on both Monday and Tuesday of this week, along with Greenville, Wetumpka, and some other places in between, Montgomery. And so we're working hard, and ultimately the voters are going to have some choices to make as to who they prefer as their United States Senator.
I look at that, and it's a conversation I had last hour with one of my guests. Is it stylistic more than, and we'll go back to a question somebody asked, because, you know, I was wondering, out of all the candidates on the Republican side, how different would your votes ever be, right? I mean, we're a conservative state and conservative.
Substantially.
Yeah, so okay, explain that.
I'm the only conservative running.
You think your vote would be different than on the big issues of the day than the other Republicans running?
Absolutely, if what they have done in their past is an indicator of what they'll do in the future. By way of example, tax increases. Most Republicans don't want higher taxes. They want to be able to keep the money to take care of their own family. I have voted against taxes historically. I was ranked number one by the Alabama Taxpayers Defense Fund out of 140 legislators when I was in the legislature. I fought Bob Riley's 2003 $1.2 billion tax increase, representing the anti-tax forces in the statewide televised debate. Katie Britt, I don't think she's ever seen a tax increase she didn't like. She supported gasoline tax increase, income tax increase, expanding the scope of the sales tax, increase in property taxes, utility taxes. Just go down the list. That's a big difference.
This is a question Thomas and Irvington had, Tony and Fairhope had sent this to me and said earlier, he asked you, he said, do you think Congressman Brooks will be a target by the left if elected to Senate and therefore be ineffective because the left is going to be after you all the time?
I would not be a target of the left if I was ineffective. The reason they target you is because you are highly effective.
So that targeting is showing that, the idea that you go in, now you're, you know, a smaller body there in the Senate, that you wouldn't be targeted more or boxed out more because of that, because of the you know, the cachet you have with a lot of conservatives.
The very fact that I am effective is why the socialists and the fake news media consider me to be a threat, which is in turn why they try to intimidate me into doing things that are not good for our country. And they know that I don't back down in these fights over border security. I don't back down in the fights over tax increases. I don't back down in defense of free enterprise. I don't back down on whether we should have socialized medicine. I don't back down on these huge deficits that have given us a $30 trillion debt that may drown us in a national insolvency and bankruptcy. And that angers them. And I apparently carry some kind of weight with the public, which in turn makes it easier for our side to win elections, which, of course, makes it easier for our side to get our agenda in place and stop the socialist march on America.
Now, you know you can't talk to any show down here in this neck of the woods without getting this question. The I-10 Mobile River Bay Bridge project here. And John's asking about that. What can you do on that? What's your take on it?
Well, I believe all of the answers of all of the senatorial candidates is the same, that we will support whatever proposal it is that Baldwin County and Mobile County and the state of Alabama come up with. The way things work right now is the federal government spends a whole lot of money on roads in the state of Alabama, but we defer to the state of Alabama the best prioritization for the expenditure of those funds, i.e. which roads need to be fixed first. And so it's the Alabama Department of Transportation and Governor Kay Ivey right now that are paramount in the pecking order in determining where the federal funds should go.
Yeah, I know that I've had that discussion. I had a discussion with Congressman Carl, but also his predecessor, Congressman Byrne, and the idea, because I think a lot of people think that you can go in Congress and allocate the money directly to the project, right? And the way I understand it, you can.
You can.
But
we don't do it. We haven't done it since I've been a United States Congressman. But Congress controls the purse strings, and if we decide that we want to get into the business of picking exact roads that shall get the money, no matter whether it's supported by the local state government, Congress has that authority because it's our money. But you may recall the big debate over the Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska.
Yes.
That kind of put a stop to congressmen and senators misallocating resources, as occurred in that one instance. It was all pork barrel, and that was not the way the money should have been spent, and so an end was put to it. But we can go back to that pork barrel process if that's what the public ultimately wants us to do, but that would cut out the state of Alabama.
Okay, so with the current situation, that's why it goes to here LDOT to be doled out, right? It comes from the federal government to the state agency, then from the state agency to the project.
That is correct. Now, we have different buckets that we put the money into. Some might be you got to spend this on interstate. Some might be you have to spend it only on U.S. highways. Some might be, okay, you can use it for Alabama highways. Some might even be county roads and city streets. There might be these buckets, but ultimately where the money is spent that's in those buckets, that is determined by the state of Alabama. And I'm a states' rights person. I believe that's the way it should be. I believe that our local and state officials know far better than me how to best prioritize the expenditure of our rather limited resources.
Congressman, remind folks, more information on your senatorial campaign, where do they go?
If you want to help, please go to mobrooks.com. I'm the conservative candidate in this race. And as I mentioned earlier with Sean, I'm the only candidate running for the United States Senate who stood with 650,000 Republicans when we voted against Doug Jones in 2017.
Congressman Brooks, I will talk to you again soon.
Look forward to it. Take care.
All right. You too. And we're wrapping up Paul Feinbaum's show on the way next.